very much. We're going to go on to the next case, which is 091496, Christine Lightgen versus Franciscan Kemp Health. And it's Mr. Rackless.
Thank you, Your Honor. My name is Michael Rackless. It pleases the court. I'm one of the attorneys representing the plaintiff and appellant, Dr. Christine Lightgen. The only issue before this court as it conducts its de novo review is whether the district court erred in its grant of summary judgment on Dr. Lightgen's retaliation claim based on Judge Crabb's determination that there was no causal connection between her protected activity and her termination. It is possible to characterize this as a garden variety employment dispute, very different from the political dispute that was before Your Honors just a few minutes ago. But that indeed makes the errors and the adverse inferences in this case all the more apparent and all the more appropriate and necessary to reverse.
Now, if Dr. Lightgen thought the compensation system was discriminatory, why didn't she do anything to change it during her tenure as a department chair?
Your Honor, the record does reflect, in fact, that she did make efforts while she was department chair. There's within the statements of additional fact that were provided, citations to her deposition testimony reflected that there were efforts and proposals made in the department. There was backlash associated with some of those proposals from other doctors, including one male physician that there was some concern about that might cause morale issues and other types of upheaval, if you will, that she grew uncomfortable with. So the record does reflect, contrary to the arguments that have been made, that she did make efforts during that time.
Who has the power to decide?
That's a more complicated question. The power to decide a change, as the record reflects, may have been within the department. There were other approvals that were going to be made, but there would have to be certainly votes on it between all of the different physicians within the department, I believe.
Well, that makes a serious difference in the analysis. If the plaintiff herself is part of the decision-making apparatus of this medical practice and chooses not to exercise her authority to move that decision-making along in a way that is favorable to her, or can't, even though she's part of the decision-making process, she gets outvoted. I fail to see how a Title VII claim is going to attach to that sort of a situation when she's, in fact, among the decision-makers loses the vote.
Your Honor, to be fair, there was no vote that was being taken. There were efforts that were being made to try and gather support for that. That's what was going on within the department.
It's important to know exactly what the decision-making process involved, who the ultimate decision-making authority was, and if there's a failure of proof on that falls on you. You're out of luck.
Your Honor, to be fair about that, the retaliation claim does not rely on those points. There were efforts that were made, and the record is clear on that. There was a change in administration that occurred in 2004 when Dr. Edward Sandy was brought in, and there was a very strong effort by both Dr. Lightgen and Dr. Keel, and there's an affidavit of hers in the record, to try and make some changes with this new administration coming in. And indeed, the admissions, I think, that are in the record are that Dr. Sandy suggested that he would do that, but of course that's really putting a patina on
it. So is it up to the department chair to make the change?
It's not up to the department chair. It's up to the entire department, I believe, would have some vote in that.
So then why did it make a difference when Sandy came in?
Well, in order to try and gather support, in order to try and move that along, you have a male physician there who may be able to work and deal with some of those issues, who in fact promised that he would deal with those questions. There's evidence in the record of both Dr. Keel, Dr. Lightgen going to Dr. Sandy and making these complaints about the discriminatory pay system, which he himself said, yes, I will look into that. The problem, of course,
was not. By the time 2006 comes around, it's not a new issue. It's really one she's been advocating for and pretty vocally, I guess you say, even during her chairmanship.
There were efforts that were being made. There is a new issue that comes up, and that deals with one of the issues I did want to touch on. There were two. One was the September 5th meeting with Tom Tigler, who's the corporate CFO of the the organization, and the Kiel affidavit that deals with other evidence that is appropriately considered. September 5th, there's a meeting with the CEO between Dr. Lightgen and Tom Tiglar. That had not happened previously. There's no evidence that anything like that had occurred before. Important because that's outside of the department. Department politics, efforts in there proved fruitless. As a result, she goes outside of the department to a high-ranking corporate officer and says, there's a gender discrepancy in the manner of pay that's going on here. Immediately after that meeting, which had not happened before, Tiglar meets with Sandy. Within 24 hours, he goes to the department head, which is not a surprise because the department head...
Isn't Homelay outside the department as well?
Not really.
She had gone to Homelay with the complaint...
Holme had participated in reviews that had occurred before where Dr. Lightgen had raised these issues. Nurse Holme, I believe she was a vice president that dealt with nursing issues, was in fact directly involved in the department, not unlike Dr. Sandy. Tom Tiglar had no affiliation in day-to-day activities or in monitoring ideas of control within that department. Tiglar is well separate. Ideas with Holme that have been raised are misstated to the court to suggest that that's because she was a vice president, somehow that meant that there were complaints that were raised outside of the department. That is an inaccurate statement. Indeed, that the court balked on that too, because when the court was trying to minimize the inferences, if you will, from the Tiglar meeting, unfortunately what she did was tie it to Holme, suggesting that the two were the same, which they were not.
If we're talking about temporal proximity, then it seems to me that the unique event that is closest in time to her firing is when Dr. Lightgen spoke poorly about the hospital and her colleagues to this doctor the hospital was recruiting. That seemed to have ruffled quite a few feathers. What was the evidence in the record about whether there were email exchanges or meetings or other communications about this behavior? It's very hard for hospitals to get, you know, OBGYNs these days who deliver babies because of the horrendous malpractice rates.
Your Honor is correct on that. It depends on how you look at the temporal timing issue. That occurred in the latter part of October, and there was evidence in the record from the testimony, at the very least from Dr. Lightgen, that she was treated poorly and with anger as a result of the meetings with conversations with Dr. Aiken. But I would direct Your Honor, even before that, to testimony in the record where after the Tiglar meeting, which occurred on September 5th, that Dr. Lightgen testified that Sandy was angered about that meeting. The reason he had been angered about that, and that preceded only by a couple of days, the September 8th timeline of supposed misconduct that was created out of whole cloth at that point in time. It had not been created before. There was no action sought to terminate Dr. Lightgen in any capacity. That was created within 2 days of the Tiglar meeting outside of the department, and that is indeed the temporal, that is the action that was taken on the heels of the protected activity.
What action was taken?
The creation of the timeline, which was ultimately used to terminate Dr. Lightgen. Diane Holme, in her deposition, admitted that the September 8th creation of the timeline was indeed the start of the termination process. So I would suggest the temporal proximity here, much closer to the situation in the Culver case, was within days of the Tiglar meeting and within 2 days of the Tigler's meeting with Sandy, where Tiglar reprimanded Sandy for allowing this situation to continue. I would like to reserve a little bit of time for rebuttal. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you. Mr. Modell?
May it please the Court. My name is Michael Modell. I represent Franciscan Skemp Healthcare.
Who makes the compensation decisions at this clinic?
It depends which compensation decision. There's
one at issue in this litigation.
If the question is who could change the compensation for the shared delivery quarter's portion of the compensation, the department could.
Okay.
And the record, I think, is absolutely clear.
You mean the department head has unilateral authority to do that?
No, the department, the physicians in the department.
And how is that done?
It's done by a vote.
So democratically?
Correct.
You know,
one doctor, one vote, not the percentage of the business, or it's
correct.
It's one doctor, one vote.
Correct.
Your facts section lists pages and pages of misdeeds, alleged misdeeds by Dr. Lightgin, but there's no indication that any of these misdeeds were officially recorded or presented to her as is required by your policy. Was there any such official documentation? I mean, can you tell me the times that she was informed of a problem?
I can tell you, Your Honor, first that there is no official policy that required in the context of a termination for her to be informed of particular issues. Oh. I can tell you that she was informed routinely of concerns, and if I can actually... In the proposed findings of fact, I believe it's number 225. This is during the relevant time period, which is the 2006 time period, July through October. Number 225, finding a fact, which is based on deposition testimony, reads as follows. Lightgin estimates that concerns were brought to her attention 3 to 6 times during this time period. This is the 2006 time period. The responses admit. Yes, Your Honor, she was advised routinely of these concerns.
Well, 3 to 6 times would not, in my mind, be routinely when your facts section listed page after page of these misdeeds.
No, I think if we look at the facts section for the period, including the timeline, for the period July 2006, when the Stone incident began, through the time of the termination decision, there are not scores of them. There were maybe 6 to 8 incidents.
You know, according to your facts, on July 31st of 2006, Dr. Sandy emailed Holme stating that he... I'm sorry.
Bless you.
Thank you. That won't be part of his time. Oh, my. Where was it?
July 31st email.
Yeah, thank you. Stating that he wanted to... address the problems with Dr. Lightgin by using a performance counseling approach and an employee's assistance program referral. Did he ever do this?
He did not, to my knowledge, use an employee assistance approach. There were discussions that was following the Wendy Stone incident. And there were discussions with the plaintiff about that incident specifically.
It's hard to see why there were this whole string of conducts that you say resulted in her dismissal that went on for years, going back, I guess, to 2001 or so, and then all of a sudden they become so severe, not for counseling anymore, but termination. What was the change? Why the difference?
2001 through 2003, 2004, I think you see that there was one of the exhibits and one of the documents that the two committees had was the timeline that had been put together previously by Ms. Anderson, who was Bonnie Young's predecessor. And there was the set of behaviors that were similar to the behaviors that occurred in July through October of 2006. The head of that division for the hospital, a female doctor, Margaret Grenison, in fact had recommended that Ms. Lightgin be terminated, and a decision was made to not do that. There was an effort to try to work with her to allow her to improve in those areas, and I think in March of 2006 there was some suggestion that in her review that she had improved in her communication. It was July of 2006 when these problems then once again surfaced. And it was the identical type problems. It was the abusive conduct toward a staff member, Wendy Stone. And the issue, and I don't know if the court could glean that from the documents, but the issue was Ms. Stone is a nurse in delivery. And another nurse had been advised that she was to record that an induction was to occur at a certain time. And that nurse failed to do that. And Ms. Stone then was the nurse in charge. And Dr. Lightgen, when it didn't occur with the induction being at the time she wanted, belittled that nurse, Wendy Stone, in front of the family, in front of the patient. And it was such an appalling and offensive presentation by her that the nursing staff came up with this code teal, which is when they announce that, other nursing staff come and can provide moral support for the person who's being verbally abused by the physician.
What does teal mean? I always thought it was the color of blue.
It is. It's they have obviously code blues, and they selected code teal, T-E-A-L, as just this is their way of announcing that there's somebody who requires that support.
Are they authorized to do something like that? I thought codes in a hospital or a medical clinic setting are, you know, a medical emergency is having to do with patient care, not interpersonal disputes among staff.
Well, Your Honor, I don't know the answer to your question, but I would advise that. I believe it's certainly a patient care issue when, and it was the very concern that the staff had, that if an individual is being shouted at by a doctor and being belittled by a doctor, the nurse, and the nurse feels intimidated such that he or she's not going to respond to the doctor or provide information that might be helpful for patient care, that it does become a patient care issue.
When did this code teal device get put in place by the nursing staff? Was it July of 2006?
Correct.
And when did it come to the attention of the management of this clinic?
I'm sorry, what's the this?
Code teal.
I think management of the department knew, and management, I mean, the structure of the department is you have a department head, you have Bonnie Young, who oversees all of nursing for this group, you have Diane Holme, who's administratively over this whole section, women, children. So these are all individuals that have that knowledge.
So when did they get brought into the loop about code teal?
I don't know if the exact date's in the record, but my understanding is this all occurred in this last week of July of 2006, immediately following the Wendy Stone incident. I think Your Honor had asked about who had the power to change and how did that occur. And again, in the undisputed facts, I'm looking at 27 of the defendants. After Nelson reported that the shared delivery revenue component of the compensation system was a departmental matter, the department took no action to modify the system prior to Lightgen becoming department chair in 1999, and that's admitted. Okay. This is that 1993-1999 time period. And then number 29, prior to 1999, when Lightgen became department chair, she never requested a departmental vote to change the shared delivery component of the compensation system, and the matter never came up for a departmental vote. That's also admitted.
What significance does Dr. Lightgen's complaint to the CFO of SGEMP have here? Does he have any decision-making authority over compensation matters?
No, he does not. And our position, Your Honor, is it has no effect. It's the identical complaint that had been made all along for 13 years. Mr. Tigler is, as I understand, the plaintiff's argument is he's outside the department, or Holme is outside the department, and if the court will look at the interrogatory answers, interrogatory 7 of plaintiff's interrogatory answers, plaintiff said that she talked to members of the hospital compensation committee back prior to the time she's even a chair. I guess I'm out of time. And thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.
Your Honors both sort of asked the same question, what changed after September 5th? And it's pretty evident the Tigler meeting occurred. It's no dispute that right after that meeting, Tigler met with Sandy. And Sandy, unlike the situation with Keel, and there's her affidavit in it that I direct Your Honor's attention to, she was forced out after making large complaints about the Pink Ghetto by June of 2006, just a few months prior. Tigler called Sandy immediately. 2 days later, the September 8th memo of misconduct was created. I also note for you, as Your Honors have been talking, we've been talking about the Stone issue. The September 8th list of misconduct doesn't focus on the Stone issue. It focuses on all other conduct. Yet the defendants have come here and now argued again it's the Stone issue that's so important. Well, Your Honors have already seen emails and the like. Judge Rovner, you had articulated the fact that those emails just talk about an employee assistance program. There was never any indication to Dr. Lykin at any time, including, most importantly, March of 2006, when she was reviewed and told that she was not more secure in her job as she was right at that time. That's Dr. Sandy's testimony on this. Then, meeting with Tigler, meeting with Sandy and Tigler, leading to the September 8th memo that goes way beyond anything in the Stone incident and way beyond any reference to employee assistance programs or anything like that. The inferences there cannot lead to the summary judgment ruling, but instead should have been taken by the district court along with the Keel affidavit, which she claims was unrebutted. If you look at page 20 of Judge Crabb's opinion, she talks about the unrebutted nature of that affidavit. And the inferences associated with that and the way in which Keel was treated further provided evidence that did not support summary judgment being granted against Dr. Lykin. So we had asked that the opinion be reversed and be remanded for trial. Thank you very much.
Thanks to both parties. And, of course, the case will be taken under advisement.